Accession number 18018, real one.
Major Pullen, real one. Where were you born, please?
Broome, Norfolk, in New England.
How do you spell Broome?
Broome. Near Bungates, and the Waveney Valley. My family had a small brewery there. Family owned business.
Which year were you born?
1928, in November as ever was. On the 27th.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in the Bungay area?
Yes, I did. I went to the local village school as a starter. And that led up to the World War, which I was then about 11 or 12 years old. So as opposed to going away to school, the family kept me locally and I went to the local grammar school at Bungay, which is a purely boys' school and really quite strict.
How much did the war affect you in the Bungay area?
Well, we were en route between the coast and, of course, Norwich, which was bombed quite a lot, and there was also airfields. There must have been, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, basically American airdromes in the area. And they were really doing daytime operations, and we had quite a lot to do with them because on the odd occasion, long-range Messerschmitts, like 110s, would mix in with them at dusk and come down and bring them down, shoot them down. I literally watched one Liberator shoot another Liberator down when they were coming back on one particular occasion. My father, who was organising the local Home Guard, and we'd got this brewery with, of course, some lorries. We made the breweries a sort of command post, and we'd call blokes in, put them into lorries, and go out to where various aircraft crashes. And at a comparatively young age, I was heaving alive, half alive, or dead Americans out of aircraft, and there was ammunition going off around the place. Possibly one could say dangerous, yes, but frankly, at about 11 or 12 years old, you didn't really think of the danger, but it was very exciting. We also, as far as the local Home Guard was concerned, helped man searchlights and anti-aircraft guns, just doing the hard work, not the clever stuff. This is apart from normal stuff like looking out for paratroops and that sort of stuff. Fifth Column is coming in. One amusing night. My father and I would travel around various positions to see people who were on lookout. And at that stage, we'd only really got 12 balls. Well, 12 balls at the end, the muzzle end, of course, had choked. And the ammunition we'd got had got a solid hunk of lead in the end of the 12-ball cartridge. This dear chap had seen this pheasant tantalisingly walk up and down in front of him for about half an hour and couldn't resist it. So up came the 12-ball, and there was an almighty bang as the 12-ball peeled back rather like a banana because the bit of lead wouldn't get through the choke at the far end. He was knocked over backwards, of course, and was lying on the ground swearing like crazy. We did point out that the ammunition could be highly lethal to own troops, and so in fact there's about 4 small balls as opposed to this large hunk of lead in the end, subsequently.
Any other incidents you can remember from your Home Guard days?
Well, there was quite a bit. we set up the odd machine gun and had a go with an aircraft, German aircraft, and they came over because they were comparatively low, which is very hairy, highly illegal, and of course could have been dangerous to us in that if they decided to do a little bit of an about turn, a bit of strafing, we'd have been in dead trouble. I don't suppose we got anywhere near them, and if we had, they probably wouldn't have spotted where we were anyhow. No, as I said, it was mainly we were en route. We were called out when Lowestoft, which is not far away, was badly hit one particular night. And there was a tragic bit there because there was a club which had got lots and lots of wrens in it that had been bombed, and that was awful. But we...
Did you attend the scene of that tragedy? Did you attend the scene of that tragedy?
Oh, yeah. The thing is, we were called out to all sorts of incidents like this. The emergency services, as such, were very, very stretched. And a lot of them were insular to the degree that of the airfield. Ambulances, medical staff and so on were more confined to the airfield area as opposed to being going out to find one of their aircraft which had crashed some distance away. And so, but that was the sort of thing that we could do, and throw them into lorries and take them back to the airfield. So,
whereabouts in Lowestoft did this tragedy occur?
It was somewhere near the seafront. I can't remember it exactly, the place.
Did you help any of the survivors?
Oh, well, one was doing sort of everything, really. Picking up a piece here and a piece there. Sometimes there was a whole body, sometimes there wasn't. And a bit of digging out as well, of course.
Was your home guard unit called the Broom Home Guard or the Bungay Home Guard?
Now, that's a good question. It had got a number, actually. Basically, there were three villages. Broom, Headingham, and Ditchingham. Each one was supposed to be a platoon, and the whole formed a company. In practice, each of the platoons was somewhere in the region of about 30 or 40 people. So it was very much more than a company. In fact, it was almost sort of up to a battalion strength in a way. It was an interesting organisation in that we got lots of quite young people in the Home Guard as well, because of course being farming and a farming area, they were not allowed to go for soldiers. They had to stay behind and farm. We got a super system of communications, and regular army units would come through our area and we'd have a joint exercise with them. We'd defend something and they would attack it, or vice versa. We cheated like hell because we got kids running around telling us where they were and so on and so forth.
Coming back to that incident where the wrens were killed, which year would that have been?
Oh, God. Boom, boom, boom. I'd hate to try and pin it down. 41, 42? I don't know. I'd hate to pin it down.
It's all right.
There were so many things that were happening about the same time.
It will be on record anyway. Any other memories you've got from the Second World War?
God. We went on a firing exercise on one particular occasion, and we were firing out to sea. The targets were virtually on top of a cliff, and as we were firing, it was a danger area. Everyone had been informed, but a couple of Hurricane fighters came along and flew smack behind where our targets were, and they got rather annoyed in that we happened to be firing at the time, and they came up, and we, so to speak, rather bit the dust because we thought we were going to get stick for them. But it wasn't really our fault because we excuse me, had been cleared.
Were there any big celebrations in your area when the end of the war came and VE Day and VJ Day came?
Any big
celebrations?
Yeah. Celebrations, in fact, apart from dancing in the streets in Bangui and Beccles and street parties. Outside, I mentioned that the family had a small brewery, and what we did was just line up barrels of beer outside with pint and half pint pots, with buckets of water there for everyone to help themselves as they came past. But nothing magnificent, nothing like sort of major cities or anything else like that. Just sort of local village dancers and that sort of thing.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be in the army yourself, please?
Yeah. At the grammar school, it was during the war, the brigadier came round, whose name I can't recall, recruiting people for the Indian Army. The idea was we had to do emergency service, as it was called then. That was before emergency service. And the idea was one could join the Indian Army, go to India, have 3 years in the Indian Army, and that would count as emergency service. There were various other options. One could go for an emergency commission in the English Army. I thought, as I was supposed or destined to take over the brewery, I was a trained brewer in all but written qualifications, because I've been with it all my life, brought up in it literally. I thought this would be a nice way to see part of the world, so I shoved in for the Indian Army. I had to do service anyway. Apart from anything else, they got rather nice glamorous uniforms. So that was it. Arrived at Caterham Guards Depot on my due date.
Which year is this?
1946, January. And we were told we were the last intake not to go to India. In other words, they didn't know what they were going to do with us because the scheme had stopped. So there we were at Caterham Guards Depot, about 500 of us. Having somewhere along the line to decide what we were then going to do, because we were wearing actual Indian Army flashes on our shoulders. We were attached for cap badging to the Queen's Royal Regiment. I still got the badge. And some of us, we went through primary and core training at Caterham. Some people tried for emergency commissions. That's for 3 years in the English Army. and there was various selection boards that had been set up. And so when there was about 10 at any given time, and only about 4 got through, the others were returned to unit, got commissioned. Sandhurst, for regular commissions, was also starting up. I held back before going for a commission until I found out what the score was a bit. And we found that people going for a regular commission, about half of them got through to Sandhurst, and the other, and quite a, two or three of the others were given a, an emergency commission as a sort of sop. So the idea was to go for a regular commission but not try very hard, then you'd end up with an emergency commission. That was the plot. It didn't work out, of course. I went along for a regular commission, determined not to try very hard, and end up with an emergency commission, then take the brewery over. And I was interviewed by a major general on arrival. "Good God, it's Neil. What are you doing here?" Like Bernie Ficklin, who we didn't know what to do with, and the local Home Guard, because he'd been in the First World War. And so we made him camouflage officer, and he'd been resuscitated, and was in charge of this selection board. But there's nothing I could have done to have avoided going to Sandhurst. I was sort of automatically there, the old adage of, it's who you know, not what you know. And so Sandhurst it was, which meant that I was then committed for a period of time. During that period of time, the brewery was taken over by a whiskey company. Well, not taken over, amalgamated with. And the whiskey company went for a ball of chalk and took the brewery down with it, so the family lost the lot. House, brewery, estate, everything. Because they were liable as directors. So I stayed in the army. It's as simple as that. It was fate, really, that decided it, as opposed to a field marshal's baton glowing on the horizon.
And when were you commissioned then?
I was commissioned in December 1948 into the Royal North Regiment.
September?
No, December.
December.
22nd.
And then?
I joined the regiment, 1st Battalion, in Berlin during the airlift. That was very interesting. Flying in on DC-3s and so on and so forth.
Why were you involved in the airlift?
That's the only way you could get in and out of Berlin, because the Russians had isolated Berlin. There was a Russian sector, American sector, French sector, and us. And the Russians having... There was only one road, basically, or the main road into and out of Berlin, and that the Russians wouldn't let convoys go through, so everything was airlifted in or airlifted out. That included families, children, the lot.
So were the 1st Royal Norfolk stationed in Berlin?
Yep.
When, which dates approximately were you in Berlin?
That would be 1949. I suppose we'd have been there for about 6 months or so.
What were conditions like in Berlin then?
It was all right. We had, compared to the Germans, we'd got lots of money to throw about by comparison. And we were able to go to nightclubs, we got duty-free booze, etc., etc., etc. We lived extremely well, actually. There was no question of any privations.
Did you have much contact with the Russians?
No. In simple as that, really.
Or the Americans or French?
Not really. One would bump into them, but we didn't intermingle as such, no.
What was the attitude of the German civilians towards the British troops?
That's rather... In Berlin, they were quite friendly. They knew that we were there and we were sort of a lifeline, that they could easily be taken over if we'd not been there, or the Americans had not been there, by the Russians. And so they were very, how can I put it, grateful to us for being there. It was a different story when we moved from Berlin to Hohenrott near Dusseldorf, which we subsequently did. There's a distinctly anti-feeling.
How did that show itself?
Oh, somebody quite nicely say English pig, that sort of thing, you know. We had to wear a uniform when we went out. We were not allowed out in civilian clothes. Unless we were riding or something like that.
Did you personally get any verbal abuse from Germans?
No, on the odd occasion. Ask me if I did anything.
I was just about to ask you.
There was rather a fat one who said English wine. And I'm afraid I couldn't stop myself. I got him one straight in the middle and he went down. I was doing boxing at the time.
Had anything been done to provoke his remark, or was it just a gratuitous remark?
He might have brushed, but there's no shoving, pushing or anything else. No, nothing.
Was this just on the street in Dusseldorf?
Yeah. There was a wine fest on at the time, so he was probably well away with some wine.
So which years or months were you in Dusseldorf area?
Hey, oops. I was just trying to figure. Long ago. I suppose we'd been knocking around until, let's see, it'd been basically it'd been 1950. Which bits of it, I'm not really sure. Ah, I had my birthday there, I can remember that.
That's in November.
That was in November. So that would have been November 49, I reckon. Yeah, because then we moved to United Kingdom. We were told we were going to Hamburg, but in practice we ended up at Dover Castle, which is an interesting situation. So I was doing mess secretary, and we got BAFs, British Army Forces vouchers, sterling, Deutschmarks, all sort of knocking around the place. We were very, very much at a low ebb as far as strength was concerned. The officer strength and other rank strength was very, very low. This is when we were at Dover. At Dover Castle itself. That was a fascinating place. Nothing terribly exciting there. We were all carrying more than one job.
Why was the battalion so under strain?
It just happened that way. It's sort of run down and not being reinforced with national servicemen or anything, because they'd been sort of more or less directed elsewhere. I'm not sure why it was low in strength, it just was. The band was at full strength, the corps of drums was at full strength, but the actual companies themselves were very low in numbers.
Why do you say Dover Castle was a fascinating place to be in?
Well, as a place. I mean, we were with the keep and somewhere to live, with the history and the looking out over the channel and everything else, because it sits on top of the place. I mean, you're living in a bit of history. The officer's mess was absolutely superb. It was built by George III for his mistress, I gather. And in the dining room itself, with just a candelabra down the centre of the table with the silks and the silver on the table, and an enormous fire, log fire burning. You looked up, you couldn't really see the ceiling. With the regimental band playing outside, quite honestly, if one had cheese and biscuits and water, it would have tasted good. The atmosphere, absolutely fantastic.
Did you go from England then to Korea?
We went to Crowborough after Dover Castle to assimilate reinforcements and do lots and lots of training before going to Korea. Dover Castle needed, how can I put it, garrisoning, but Crowborough was just a camp which didn't, so therefore we could concentrate on training. And it was a bit of a grubby little camp at Crowborough. Lots of families were in quarters and hirings in the area. And we literally trained like crazy. Stamford, sort of Dartmoor, all over the show, wherever we could get. At that time, I was intelligence officer, just got cracking. And that's how I got English, who is probably the best orderly I've ever had. He was an absolutely incredible bloke. He'd been a full corporal in Germany, but he was rather keen on the officer's mess whiskey. So I got him